Good morning and welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. My usual beat is Classical 101, classical music all day, every day. But for now, I'm with you on 89.7 for a discussion about books on today's edition of All Sides Weekend with the estimable and wonderful Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic and maintains a wonderful blog called The Longest Chapter, and with Kevin Griffith from Capital University, who is the poet laureate of this show anyway, if not the entire state. And we will be taking your calls, asking you for book recommendations, book reviews, what you didn't like, what you did like, talking a bit about it's hard to talk about summer reading when it's so gray and lousy outside, but we'll work on that as well. And as usual, my two guests have brought stacks of books with them, so I'm going to throw it out there first to Kevin and say to him three words and ask him to discuss David Foster Wallace.
Thanks, Christopher. Yeah, I brought in David Foster Wallace's posthumous novel, The Pale King. We talked about it a little bit on the last show with Marilyn, and I hadn't read the whole thing at that time, but I took the time to read through the entire novel. David Foster Wallace, of course, passed away, committed suicide in 2008 as a young man, 47 years old, I believe. He had struggled with depression all of his life, and he had gone off his medication, the story goes, and so he struggled with that. He was definitely a literary genius, began writing his first novel as a senior thesis project when he was at Amherst College in Massachusetts, and that one's called The Broom of the System. That's a classic novel, too, and if you read that, I did. After reading this, I went back to read The Broom of the System, and if you read that, it's just amazing what the work of an undergraduate could accomplish in it, and it certainly gives you a sense of what you're getting to. With The Pale King, he also wrote his most famous novels, Infinite Jest, which is 1,200 pages, came out in 1998, considered a masterwork of postmodern fiction. I really think that Foster Wallace has, in The Pale King, has elevated himself into the realm of like a James Joyce or a Thomas Pynchon, that status of a writer. This is a phenomenally well-written, ambitious novel. It was assembled by his editor after his death, so it is quite disconnected. You have to read it more or less as sort of discontinuous chapters, some of them very short, almost like prose poems. Others are very long dialogues between characters. And it's an interesting premise. It's about the IRS. It's about the excruciating boredom of working for the IRS. And the story goes that David Foster Wallace actually was employed by the IRS for a year as a way to do research for this book. So he makes himself a character in the book, of course. It has a lot of metafictional elements. And it's just amazing to see this writer who never lets down his guard and just pushes the reader as hard as he can to get you to understand how certain people, who even people who have to cope with just boredom every day, just this job working for the IRS, are heroes as well and have dignity as well. I wanted to read just a little bit from it. I thought this was interesting. One of the characters in the novel, and there's so many of them, I forgot which one this is. There's a lot of monologues, a lot of dramatic monologues in the novel. But he's talking about his experience as a childhood, and there's an interesting Columbus reference in here. He's talking about teachers, young teachers, that he experienced as a child. And he says, "The young men were the worst, some actual martinets, depressed and bitter, because the idealism that had brought them to us was no match for the petrified bureaucracy of the Columbus school system."
Okay.
But we all know that was supposed to be taking place in the 70s. And, of course, the Columbus school system is just great now and has very visionary leadership. We all know that.
And it is a satire in some ways in this book. And David Foster Wallace, the reason I was glad you brought that in and we're talking about him is because I've been seeing his name everywhere for the last several months. And I didn't know much about him except that he took his own life and he was a writer, which is not enough to know about somebody.
Yeah, he was a MacArthur Genius Grant Award winner several years ago. I just think it's well worth reading. It is a struggle. It is not something to just pass the time. It's not light reading, but it's well worth the worth the effort. At times, just let your guard down and go with it. Don't try to understand where you're going in the novel. But I think you'll learn a lot. And I think as readers, we should experience a writer who just has incredibly grand ambitions and wants to be more than just someone who is audience friendly and sells a lot of books. I think he's going to be recognized as one of the truly great novelists of the last 50 years.
Well, and it's interesting that the publishers got behind him, too, because in this day and age, I mean, that's a type of author that would come out in the 40s or 50s and would be nurtured by a publisher, and clearly, you know, they recognized his talent early on and got behind him. And yet now here also he's on the bestseller list. And I've often wondered, is he, you know, how is it that then that's a consumer sign, you could say, that it's popular with the consuming reading public. You know, is it this accessible to them? Are they having trouble with it? Do they read it all the way through? Do they find it's a terrific novel? Oh. Or do they get partway through and let it go? That's kind of what I wonder. And did he get there because of his story?
Well, I wondered about that. And if he's on the bestseller list, then he is more than a cult writer, because that is the leading indicator in this business of financial success, which publishers are in the business to make money, let's face it. So,
Yeah, he's clearly in the canon, though, of contemporary literature, because I know I have colleagues at Capital, and I know he's taught elsewhere, too, who teach contemporary fiction, and they will. His short story, The Girl with the Curious Hair, is always anthologized. It's in every fiction anthology out there. So students read him. And I know I've had several students at Capital who are really big fans and read everything by him and read him religiously, everything that comes out. So he has an intellectual following as well.
Would you recommend, if someone was going to just start reading him, to begin with the first book that you mentioned that he wrote when he was in college?
What I would look for is to look for one of his books of short stories, if you're getting started, like The Girl with the Curious Hair. That's the name of the collection. I think that would be very good. But I would strongly recommend reading The Pale King. I think that's just the epitome of his talent right here. I think it's great to see his maturation here.
But do you get lost? I guess what I'm sort of like Wagner. Do you, you know, if you're going to start with opera, you don't start with Wagner. Would you get lost with The Pale King, or is it better to start in the beginning and to grow with him?
I think if you're looking for just a way to get into his works, let's not even start with fiction, then he was an incredibly good nonfiction essayist, much more accessible. One of his great collections of nonfiction is A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do, where he talks about being on a pro tennis circuit. He talks about being on the set of a David Lynch film. It's all very interesting, very witty. He's a very witty nonfiction writer, wrote a lot of articles for Harper's. That was sort of a side thing he did, but those are highly accessible, funny.
He sounds like a very good summer project.
Yes.
I mean, a book that you could you'd spend some time with and put it down and read something else and come back to it, or spend some time with
that. Especially in these grim, introspective, rainy days.
Yes. Keep the Dominic Dunn handy, too, as I often do. I'm Christopher Purdy. We're talking about books with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. And Cassie Rose, outside in the lobby, threw out a very intriguing title from Akashic Books, which is a small press that I have to ask you about, and it's called Go the F to Sleep.
Correct. And
I'm not making that up. Don't call me. Okay.
No, and it's a book that went viral because the PDF of it got loose on the internet, and that has ended up creating high sales before on Amazon before it's even been published. And it's a children's book that is for parents, you could say, from what I've read about it, and it's hilariously funny and just takes a realistic viewpoint of what it's like for parents to be raising little kids. So we'll just leave it at that. I don't know that much more about it, except it's become sort of a news phenomenon because it just got the PDF got loose and, you know, the news about that. But also because it's a small press that is now going to do phenomenally well because of this going viral.
And also, it might be this month's Tiger Mother book, you know, something like that, except what you're describing sounds a lot more fun than that rather annoying, frankly, book.
Yes.
Go the blank to sleep, which I think we've all, if we've raised children, had that in our mind once in a while. So I think that can resonate on many levels for readers, whether you have kids or not.
And I'd like to take a look at it just to see, you know, how far he pushed it, how clever it is, what are the illustrations, that kind of thing.
I'm wondering if we don't know the author. author, right? Do you know the author? If it's male or female, it would be interesting to know, too, if it was a dad or a mom.
I think it's a dad.
Oh, good. That sounds right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Kevin and I are laughing. Cassie, what else did you bring with us to talk about for a while?
One of my favorite books recently over this past month is called Galore. It's by Michael Crummy, or maybe it's Crummy. I'm having trouble with a lot of the authors' names in the stack that I've got. Galore is on the short list for the IMPAC Dublin Literary Award, which is a huge international award that I love to follow because it really gives you a list of books that are, one, international, and two, of great literary quality that you may not be introduced to. So anyway, he's on the short list. He's published by Other Press here in America. He's a Canadian writer, and it takes place in, it's called Galore, and it takes place in Newfoundland. And it's got this folkloric sort of magical quality to it, which he weaves into this story that takes place in the 18th and 19th centuries in Newfoundland fishing village. So it's very cold and very bleak, but the people are just so intriguing. And the magic starts in the very beginning with a beached whale that everybody is surrounding, and they're cutting up this whale, and a man is found in the belly of the whale, and he's alive. So that's very biblical, obviously. And they call him the Great White because he's albino-like, and they also name him Judah. And he's mute and joins their community. And there are magical qualities about him, and it would probably be too difficult for me to try and explain the plot because it's not like it's a mystery or one thing that is happening. It's a focus on this group of people in this outport called Paradise Deep, and two rival families, one the descendants of a woman called Divine's Widow, and the other the descendants of a man named King Me Sales, or King Me Sellers. Anyway, he brings the environment to life. The characters are the kind that you live with, you love, you laugh with. And the magic part of it, you are not even aware of it. Like, there is a man who dies, and he comes back to life and is sitting in the living room of his wife, and you begin to just sort of accept him like they do. And he's done this outstanding job with an epic novel. And it's won tons of awards in Canada, and I highly recommend it if you're looking for a book to get into, get lost in, escape in, which is what I needed when I picked it up.
I need books you can't put down. Is this one of those?
Yes.
I like books. I don't have to have that, but I like that.
Yes, and it falls in that category not because you don't know what's going to happen, like some mystery is going on or there's a romance that, you know, has got you all aflutter. It's really the characters and the religion, the politics of the arena, the whole fishing industry that goes on in Newfoundland, and what he's going to do with these characters.
And Newfoundland is really a beautiful, I mean, it's just to think about being there is wonderful. Very quickly, the title and author one more time.
It's called Galore by Michael Crummy, or Crummy, C-R-U-M-M-E-Y.
I'm Christopher Purdy. Today's edition of All Sides Weekend focuses on books with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. We're going away for 60 seconds. Don't you go away.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we don't just interview influential people, we challenge them. Here's noted natural foods advocate Michael Pollan on the subject of ring ding.
I would look at the package next time. That creamy is not cream.
Well, you know what? You may know a lot about food, but you don't know the first thing about living, buddy.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the delicious news quiz that's no good for you at all from NPR.
And Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me begins tomorrow morning at 11 here on 89.7 NPR News. And at 65 degrees in downtown Columbus, some sunshine today and a few clouds, a high of 75. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 55 degrees. Sunshine for Saturday, a high of 82.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Central Ohio Trauma System, working with community partners to make Central Ohio a safer place to live. Details about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the Central Ohio Trauma System are at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, producer extraordinaire Amy Jurevich. We are back to talk about books. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. We've had a couple of email messages during the last break. Shiloh on Facebook recommends The Help, which we've talked about before. And Shiloh, I don't blame you. What a great book that was. And that is now, the movie is about to come out of that with the sublime Viola Davis.
Is that coming out this summer?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think any day now. So I do highly recommend The Help. That, to me, was a book I couldn't put down. Mm-hmm. And it was upsetting on some levels. And it was Catherine Stockett, I believe is her name.
That's right.
And it
her
was first her
first book.
Novel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, terrific. Also, Carol has sent us an email, and she's asking, with Oprah's show ending, Oprah apparently could, like, wave a magic wand and create a bestseller in 20 minutes. And with her show ending, that opportunity is gone. So do you think that's going to have any ramifications in the book business?
I think that, well, it probably will, yes, but we were just discussing before we went back in the air that it's likely she will still be writing about books and poetry in her magazine, and maybe people will be turning there. Mm-hmm. But I suppose the opening is available for the next person to have that effect. You know, will there be someone? I don't know.
I'm $5 says Maria Shriver is going to do the next big talk show. I'm telling you right now, $5.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Our phone number is 292-8513 if you're Maria Shriver, or even if you're not, give us a call. 292-8513 is the number. We'd like to know what you are reading, what you can recommend, maybe what you didn't care for. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org and find us on Facebook at All Sides. Again, the phone number, 292-8513. Cassie and Kevin, as I see it, I think you have both brought the same book, and I don't think that's ever happened before. So
it's happened before.
Darren Strauss is the author. It's called Half a Life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll let Kevin go first on this one.
This was one of those great finds I got off the new bookshelf at the library. I just happened to notice it because it comes out of McSweeney Books, called Half a Life by Darren Strauss. McSweeney's is a West Coast sort of smaller publisher run by Dave Eggers. But it has such a plain brown cover. It's completely...
No jacket.
Non-pretentious book, no jacket. So I just picked it up. I thought this might be interesting, and boy, was it ever interesting. Mm-hmm. Darren Strauss is a novelist, pretty... well-established novelist, wrote Chan and Eng, a very good novel in 2000.
That was a good novel, yes.
This is a very brief, just about 200 pages, memoir of an experience he had when he was a teenager. And he was driving to the beach and hit a girl on a bicycle and killed her. And it's about how this has affected half a life. Means he basically carried this half this incident in his life for 18 years. And it's just a gut-wrenching read. And the parents of the girl who were killed sort of never let up on him, said they forgave him, but then filed a lawsuit that dragged on forever. They had a lawyer who was just sort of getting billable hours together, basically, and then after 2 years said, well, we're not going to win this case, you know, forget about it. And there's also, tell me if I'm right on this, there's also some indication that the girl was suicidal, and she intentionally rode her bike in front of his car, and there was nothing he could do about it. So that adds another incredibly profound dimension to the book.
It does, because it's, you know, in the first line, you know immediately, I think it's one of those great first lines, which says, half my life ago, I killed a girl. And the thing is, he was absolved by everyone. I mean, witnesses in other cars said that it was not his fault. The boys in the car with him, there were, and the police.
Was
everyone,
he a kid when he was driving? Was he a teenager?
Just turned 18.
Turned 18. He was a couple months away from graduating. And what he does, you know, he describes about he's driving down the road and he sees the two girls on bicycles on the side. He's a lane over. And the next thing he knows, a bicycle and one of the girls is up on the hood and flying across his car, and he has no idea how is it she came over those two lanes. And she's not dead immediately. She dies in the hospital, but everybody says it was not his fault, but the guilt he carries. And that's what he does so well in this book, is that, you know, and that's when I wrote about it on the longest chapter, the title was, This is What Guilt Feels Like. And it's not maudlin. He doesn't ask for anyone to feel sorry for him. But he shares these moments of, like, when he's, you know, dating a girl in college or afterwards, he thinks, do I need to tell her that this happened in my life? Or when he's on a job interview, is this something I need to reveal about myself? It's with him every day and how he tries to work through it. And it's really not until his current wife, when he meets her, and this woman, she doesn't try and feel sorry for him or fix or whatever. She just says, that must be really hard for you.
The title is Half a Life by Darren Strauss. Mm-hmm. It's a brief, it looks like a short book. Mm-hmm.
It is.
But a highly emotional book, I would think.
Yes.
Are you wrung out afterwards? Or?
It won the National Book Critics Circle Award for autobiography.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have four people waiting to talk to the two of you and more coming. So let's start with Justin from Dublin, who's been waiting. Justin has a recommendation, The Singularity Is Near. Hi, Justin. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead. Enthusiastic Justin.
All right. Thanks for having me on the show. And this is actually the first time I called. So
great.
I appreciate you guys taking my call. basically, the book is about humans transcending biology with the use of technology. Mm-hmm. And the book goes on and on about the exponential growth of technology and how we use technology to perform research. And then you kind of have this vicious circle of the more capabilities we have with technology, the more research we can produce and the more productive we are. And it gets to the point that computers are growing at an exponential rate of growth, and we're able to use this computational power to be able to improve ourselves as human beings. And it kind of all plays back into that vicious circle of us improving ourselves with technology. And just kind of a funny side note, when I'm working and I kind of look around, I see everybody's kind of looking down at their cell phone, and they're playing with their computers, and they're on their laptops, and not too many people these days take an opportunity to pick up a paper book and read it. So
Kevin Griffith is nodding as you speak, Justin. Yeah. I think he's connecting with this book. Go ahead.
Well, I think another great book for you to read, and maybe you have read it on that same issue, is Jaron Lanier's You Are Not a Gadget. I've talked about that on this show. You should definitely get that book. It's called You Are Not a Gadget.
Okay.
Yeah, Jaron Lanier is the father of virtual reality. This was listed as one of the 10 best books on the New York Times for last year, and he talks about that too, about preserving our humanity in the face of this event that's called the singularity. This is like revelation for computer people. But I would strongly recommend you read it, and we're actually going to bring him to Capitol next year to talk about
great.
The book.
So
I'd be curious to know about that.
Yeah, it's called You Are Not a Gadget. Read it. It's an incredibly mind-blowing book.
Justin, keep listening, because we'll update you on that presentation at Capitol and make
that
sure you get the
that
information. Thanks, Justin, for your call. I appreciate it. We have Doris been holding from Bexley, The Mistress of Nothing, she wants to talk about. Hello, Doris.
Well, this is not like anything technical. It's story-based on a real woman's life, but it's a novel by Kate Pullinger. She's Canadian, and this won a literary award. It's the story of Lady Duff Gordon, who is in the middle 1800s, always had a salon in England with Tennyson and Meredith, and she was very intellectual, but unfortunately had tuberculosis, and she went to Egypt to live, took her maid with her, who had grown up in the household, and it's the relationship between these two women and what happens to destroy it. But it's also Egypt at the time of the canal being built. It's a very fast read. If you've traveled to Egypt, I think you'll enjoy it because of course, Lady Duff Gordon goes completely native, and her book, the Lady Duff Gordon's biography is called Letters from Egypt, and it is still in print. So it's sort of a well-known thing. But I would recommend this for people who like a good historical novel. But the other thing, I did not get the name of the award, the book on Newfoundland.
Galore, yes. Go ahead, Cassie.
Oh, the award. It's shortlisted. The awards will be announced, I think, on June 15th, but it's the IMPAC, IMPAC, Dublin Literary Award.
IMPAC Dublin.
Impact Dublin Literary Award. If you go to thelongestchapter.com, you will see, and scroll down just one post, you will see the cover of Galore, and you will also see the list of the other...
The longest, what is it?
Chapter. The longest chapter.
Okay.
Just thelongestchapter.com, and you will also see the other books that are shortlisted for this international prize.
I always like things that are on an award list from England or... Canada or things like that. Thank you very much.
Doris, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. The number to call is 614-292-8513. You can send us an email to allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to the All Sides Facebook page. Rosemary from Worthington is on the phone to talk about A Walk on the Wild Side. Hi, Rosemary.
Yes, it's by the, you know, renowned pianist Earl Wilde, who just recently died, I think maybe about a year ago. And he actually lived in the Worthington area. And I think the book is just really a treasure trove about his life in music, which was over 90 years, and talks about his years as an NBC, the pianist for the NBC Orchestra, and his early life in Pittsburgh, and his playing for various U.S. presidents. It's the kind of book I'm only into about chapter four, but you can kind of jump around, and if there's something that interests you about music, you can look in the back. And, of course, we were just so lucky to have Mr. Wilde living in the area, and I think the book is just really a compilation of his life and music. It's really good.
Rosemary, that book is on my desk as we speak, and I knew Earl Wilde because we worked together here at the station. He did some programs for us, and that's going to be one great read. I'm going to tell you right now, because he was one of the great raconteurs, in addition to being a great artist.
Well, and I was also going to add, you know, all of his recordings are under the ivoryclassics.com label, and I think any folks who are interested in his transcriptions or anything that he's played, it's really worthwhile. And, I mean, the book covers a lot about the work that he's done, so it's really great.
Thanks, Rosemary, for your call. I warmly second that recommendation, both for the book and for Earl's recordings on Ivory Classics. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. I'm glad we're getting so many calls. 292-8513. Aaron has been waiting to talk about A Walk in the Woods. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
Appreciate you taking my call. I listen every day. It's good to actually be on the radio with you.
Great.
I'm calling in because I was handed this book. The author is Bill Bryson, and I was handed this book by my future father-in-law, and we both have an affinity for, you know, the outdoors, nature, hiking, kayaking, fishing, etc. Fantastic read. It's a great story of two guys who take a 2,000-mile trek through the wilderness, and just the irony of situations and things of that nature. It provides a great read for people. It's a pretty short book, a couple few hundred pages, and just, you know, wonderful, wonderful outlook on some of the treasures we have here in our own country that, you know, most people never see.
Aaron, I also want to warmly second that recommendation. This is the book where he went on the Appalachian Trail, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
You got it.
And it was a great thing, but he goes on this trek with his buddy, who I guess he hasn't seen in a while, and the buddy gets off the plane, and he's fat and has a suitcase full of Milky Way bars, you know, which is not what you want on the Appalachian Trail.
But, unless you want bears, too.
Yes, but I thank you, Aaron, very much. That's it. Bill Bryson, a wonderful travel writer, and all his books are terrific. Thank you so much for that recommendation. 292-8513. People are also using the email allsides@wosu.org, and you can also find All Sides on Facebook. And we've got one more call for now before our next little break. This is from Jack in Grandview. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
I'm interested in your talk about Dave Wallace. My daughter went to college with him, and I decided I would jump into Infinite Jest. And I wonder if you've read that or not.
Kevin has.
To be honest, no, I have not read that. I'm going to tackle that this summer.
I tell you, my daughter calls it the infinite book.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's, I find it to be kind of a cross between Ulysses and Finnegan's Wake. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's some of it is unintelligible, but I can't put it down.
Jack, have you been able to read Finnegan's Wake or Ulysses? Because I've tried for years and haven't cracked it.
I've read Ulysses. And,
really?
And I had a teacher, a Joyce expert in college at Amherst, where Dave Wallace went, who would read Finnegan's Wake aloud to us. Mm-hmm. but yep. you can't read it. It's just
I did
not
that
without
too.
Instruction.
I did that too in college when I was at Ohio State. We had a graduate meeting and we would read Finnegan's Wake aloud.
But you said you do it in a bar.
Yeah, we do it in a bar. Yeah.
Right. So I think Ulysses is readable, but
okay.
I can't quit an Infinite Jest, but I'd like to.
Yeah. Is it a long book? Is it a lot of pages?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
oh,
they're all
God,
oh.
it's huge. Yes. 1,200 pages, I think.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's the one that you mentioned.
Right.
Well, Jack, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, but I enjoyed your talk about Dave Wallace.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We were talking about David Foster Wallace, who is very much in the news these days. Sadly, he took his own life, last year?
2008.
Mm-hmm. But he is back on the bestseller list with his latest...
The Pale King.
The Pale King, which you warmly recommend.
Yes,
right?
I strongly recommend that.
And you don't have to understand Finnegan's Wake to begin David
and
Foster. It would help, but...
Yeah, I would agree with that caller, too. Sometimes it does seem unreadable, but you can't stop reading it. It's very engaging. He's a master of voices, I think.
Do we have any beach books today to talk about? Kevin has a beach book. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if it's a beach, but it's certainly a guilty pleasure
book.
One of my favorite summer writers, Joe Lansdale. I've talked about him before, I think, last year. Every summer I like to get the latest Joe Lansdale book. He's great. He writes a series called the Happ and Leonard series, and this is a very interesting sort of noir detective series featuring Hep Collins and Leonard Pine. And Leonard Pine is a gay African-American in Texas, so that adds an interesting twist to the characters. And they're often sent out on exploits. They're kind of like hitmen, bouncers, and they have to go out and, you know, take care of business that the cops aren't going to take care of. He's a wonderful writer. Joe Lansdale knows how to write. And you got to love a book that's 200 pages long and has 73 chapters in it. I love it. You know, it keeps you right on moving. And I love it. And there, you know, every chapter is filled with brawls, fights, you know, karate, drinking, shooting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And, of course, by the end, everyone's fine or they have been shot, but you know they're going to recover. They're going to tough it out and be back for the next novel. So Joe Lansdale is just an outstanding writer. I love him. Devil Red, a Happ and Leonard novel, just came out, 2011.
So there's a series of these.
Oh, yes, there's about eight of them, and they're all fantastic. And the early ones have been reprinted by Vintage Black Lizard Crime novels, a great series.
We're a minute away from taking a break for a minute, so I just wanted to throw another my beach book recommendation is a man called William Tapley, who wrote a huge series of mystery stories. And crime stories, they are like that. They are short. That you read them in an hour. They're a lot of fun. And he was my 10th grade history teacher at Lexington High School in Lexington, Massachusetts.
Wow.
And he just passed away. And he was a wonderful teacher. But I had no his life's work was writing these books, and he became a very, very successful. William Tapley is somebody that you might want to know more about. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. We will be back in 90 seconds. You can time us. Thank you for...
There was a time
on the next Fresh Air, Jimmy Dale Gilmore. He plays bluegrass, old-timey, and country songs on his new album, Heirloom Music. Also, the story of the last great chief of the Comanche Indian Nation, who was the son of a chief and a white woman. We talk with S.C. Gwynn, author of Empire of the Summer Moon. Join us.
When you left me, my poor heart was broken.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss a new poll that shows Ohioans do not like Senate Bill 5. Also, charter schools face more criticism and the three-year college degree. Those discussions and more on Columbus on the Record. That's tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design. Creative futures begin in Saturday morning art classes for children and youth starting in June. Information and online registration at www.ccad.edu.
65 degrees with cloudy skies. Some sunshine peeking through those clouds at times. A high of 75 today. Partly cloudy tonight. A low of 55 degrees. Sunshine for Saturday and a high of 82. All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you, Amy Jurevich. We are back to talk about books between now and 12 o'clock, so there's plenty of time for you to call or email 292-8513 or allsides@wosu.org. And off mic, we were talking about IMF and Arnold Schwarzenegger, so we're not – they haven't written books, to my knowledge, so we're not going to go there. We've got a couple of people waiting for calls. We need to ask our callers. We thank you, but to be brief, because there are a lot of people waiting. Russ is on the phone from North Columbus. Tricky business and take the cars. Let's take the call. Hi, Russ. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just had a good beach book, which I literally read on the beach there in Myrtle Beach. Tricky Business by Dave Barry, which I highly recommend. It's a very funny book, and I guess one of his two fiction books, but it's really witty, and I highly recommend it. And the other one is Take the Cars, which you can get from the Ohio Historical Society, and it's a history of the Union Station in downtown Columbus, which apparently they had three different Union stations. They built it, tore it down, built it, tore it down, and built it again. And it's a really good read. It's about 45 minutes to an hour to read it, but it's a great piece of local history.
That's called Take the Cars, right? Terrific. Very much. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. Thank you for that call, Russ, 292-8513. Cassie Rose, you are the lady today with the intriguing titles. I don't dare remind people of the one you said earlier because I'll screw it up. But Purple Jesus, I must ask you about that book.
Yeah, and this actually would probably be a good beach read. It's absolutely hilarious. It is certainly in no way fine literature, but it takes place in South Carolina, low country and trailer parks, and it shines because of the language. The dialogue, this guy is spot on with it. I was laughing out loud the entire time. Now, it's not, you know, the narrative does not flow perfectly, and there are sometimes, I think, the characters, I got kind of confused, and then I thought, well, maybe that's the point, because the cousins get involved with each other, and maybe he was trying to get me to realize, you know, this is what happens when you don't know who parents who. But it and some people would probably say that this book is more of a mystery because it opens with a murder, and the protagonist, whose name is Purvis Driggers, is going through the house trying to find money that he believes is there, and he doesn't know the guy is dead sitting at the kitchen table. And then when he finds out he is dead, he thinks, oh, darn, someone got here first and got the money. And it takes place over about 3 or 4 days, and he's and it's, you know, who murdered this guy who's living in a, you know, a shack near a creek, you know, the bed springs on the porch. And also Purvis, you know, after this, his rate going through the house, witnesses a baptism by Pentecostals in a nearby. It's Kevin's look on his face like, what kind of book is this?
And it's a short book, too.
It's
my goodness.
It's a very short book. And it's Kim. And I will tell you, I also got I found this book over Twitter from Ron Charles, who was the book critic for The Washington Post. And they wrote a review about it. And I read the review and I said, oh, I'm going to get this book. And the he wrote back and he said, Ron Charles wrote back and he said, I took a chance reviewing this book, and he said, I'm glad that I did.
Okay.
And but anyway, so you don't know who murdered the guy until the end, and here is Purvis going after Martha, who was moved back to the area because of her 400-pound mother, you know. So it's very funny. And
make
I,
them Irish in Boston, and it's my fam, you know.
It's a very small press called Bancroft in Baltimore, and I was reading the dialogue out loud and just laughing. The title, Purple Jesus, comes from a drink, which is, you can Google that. I didn't know it was a cocktail.
Look at you nodding your head.
Which is, in this book, it is grain alcohol and Kool-Aid, grape juice, oranges, and sugar. But it also comes from, and I think that's where the cover is there is a monastery nearby. I know this sounds more and more. are ridiculous. And there is a carving of a purple Jesus. I need to stop because I'm going to get to the point where I can't stop laughing.
I'll just say for the record, the author is Ron Cooper, and the piece is called Purple Jesus.
Yes.
And we thank you. I said piece. I'm thinking music. The book is called Purple Jesus.
Jesus, yes.
And speaking of Baltimore, we have Ed waiting to talk to us about Emily and Einstein. Ed, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Emily and Einstein, kind of a take on the person that gets killed and then comes back for a second chance, although this one he comes back as a dog who his ex-wife rescues. And it's told in alternating chapters from the dog's point of view and then from her point of view. And it's a very good read, especially when the dog's voice is there. It's very funny.
Funny's good. We like, yeah.
I'm partway through it. I think I can see how it's going to end, but you still don't know how they're going to get there. I think it's a very good summer read, and I'm kind of into the paranormal stuff anyway, so that kind of fits right into what I like to read. The other one is an autobiography called Uppity by Bill White, former first black president of the National League in baseball. And it's his story from growing up to getting to the presidency of the National League and then retiring. And although he doesn't pull any punches, it's not written in a I hated this SOB kind of fashion all the way through. He tells who he likes. He tells who he doesn't like. He tells about his struggles as one of the first black players in Major League Baseball. And I would definitely recommend that book as well. I heard him interviewed on NPR a couple of weeks ago, and he's a very erudite man, and it's a very well-written book.
Ed, thank you so much for those two contrasting and really interesting recommendations, Uppity and Emily and Einstein. Thank you so much. We're talking about books today, All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. We have a few more minutes left to the program, so you're welcome to call. We hope you call, 292-8513. You can send us an email as well at allsides@wosu.org and talk with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. The book that you have there that about the retreat, a long retreat, Cassie Rose, can you give me a little précise on that one?
Sure, by Andrew Krivak. I think that's, again, I'm having trouble with some of the author's names, K-R-I-V-A-K. I came to this book. He actually has a new novel that was out this month called The Sojourn, and it was after looking into that book that I found my way to this memoir he wrote in 2008, and it is about his journey and pursuing the vocation of being a Jesuit priest, which he does not end up taking vows, which you learn in the very beginning of the book. But it's I like to read books about the monastic life, An Infinity of Little Hours, or The Cloister Walk with Kathleen Norris, just because of the journey of, you know, self-knowledge and also the spiritual quality of it. And he really writes a great book about the formation process. It takes a long time of scholarship and missionary work, and it's his own struggle of, you know, why am I doing this? And he takes you through his teaching years, his in Moscow and also Slovakia. He works with AIDS patients in the hospitals. And through it all, he probably about midway, he gets to a turning point where he knows that maybe this isn't for me, but he doesn't know why. And so he stays on point with that. And it's the philosophy classes, I think, that he teaches more than the theology classes that bring him to those questions of who am I? What is my purpose here? Is this something I should be doing? And when you get to the end, even though you know he is not going to be taking the vows, it's still surprising because of the reasons that he gives of what drove him to join or to think that this was his vocation. It's really a very well-written book, and although I have to say that of all the books I've read along these lines, he has a brooding to him, and he has a moodiness about him that comes out in the book. So there isn't this, most of the other books, like The Cloister Walk or even The Infinity of Little Hours, and another book called The Search for God at Harvard by Ari Goldman.
Yeah, that's a very good book.
That is a very good book. There's a lightness in those books, and with this one, the lightness isn't as much there.
It's called A Long Retreat
by Andrew Krivak.
Not maybe a beach book, but a wonderful book.
It is a wonderful book, and actually, I like to read these books in the summertime, first thing in the morning, because it does take you into a reflective place. It's not a a lot of people that read self-help books maybe, you know, I don't want to equate it, but it really does give you a chance to go into your own thoughts and to ask yourself some of the big questions.
And Bettina has sent us an email and recommends a book you can't put down, which is something I mentioned that I like. It's called The Power of One by Bruce Courtenay. It's not something I've heard of before, so I'm delighted to have that recommendation from Bettina. What I love about this program today is the variety we're having. Cassie Rose brings in two books that she talks about, Go to Sleep, and then and then The Long Retreat, which is just wonderful, and Purple Jesus, and Kevin Griffith is going to talk about one more selection. But first, I do want to talk to Sadie from Upper Arlington, who's been holding. Go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Wanted to recommend White Sargasso Sea, which is kind of it's sort of a prequel, but it has it stands in its own right. It's a book about most people are familiar with Jane Eyre, but it's actually the backstory of the Mad Mrs. Rochester, who's in his attic. And it was actually written a while ago, but it's a really great book. I'm sure some people are familiar with it.
And the author is Jean Rees?
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to remember her name. I remembered her last name, but I couldn't remember the first.
Reader, I Married Him, yes. So that's The White Sargasso Sea, a prequel to Jane Eyre. That's,
Takes place in Jamaica, yes?
Yeah.
Where
exactly.
He met her. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because she's of Creole descent. I mean, she's basically a white woman who had, but she was born in the Caribbean, and how her descent into madness, how her mothers became mad, and how that influenced her, but then also how sort of people's expectations that you are going to become mad sometimes are self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. It's really interesting. I actually read it on the beach. I thought it was, I couldn't put it down.
Thank you so much. That's a great recommendation. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. 292-8513, but I want Kevin to give us another recommendation.
I'll jump in here really quickly. We keep going, bouncing back and forth from the sublime to the ridiculous, which is a lot of fun. And so now we're back to the ridiculous.
Good.
I love this book. This is another great beach read, can't put it down type book. And it's Evil, The High-Flying Life of Evel Knievel by Lee Montville. Just came out. So it's a biography of Evel Knievel. I picked it up because I had, and I'm sure many people have picked this up, because I had very fond memories of my Evel Knievel toy, my motorcycle. Remember those?
Yes.
And there's a long chapter.
I had one, yeah.
There's a long, fascinating chapter in the book about that. That was the number one selling toy in 1973, outsold Barbie 8-1 in 1973.
Really?
That's where Evel Knievel made all of his money. And the author puts in a lot of blog posts from people recalling, giving stories of what they did, how they made their, you know, how they made their Evel Knievel toy jump their mother's hair, and they get caught in their mother's hair and wind her hair up, and they'd have to cut it
out.
Don't
try this at home.
That's very amusing, but overall, you end up with a very bitter feeling at the end of the book, because we talk about people who are sociopaths and just don't get it. We were talking about that. Evel Knievel was a really nasty person. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, just not a very good father whatsoever. That's an understatement. A real jerk, and it's a real tragedy to see his career disintegrate. I didn't realize. I thought this was just an apocryphal story, but he literally did try to jump a tank filled with sharks.
Right.
That was one of the last stunts he tried to do, and it's just despicable. They had to import these poor sharks, and half of them died, and he didn't make the jump because he did a practice jump when he was drunk and crashed, so the show had to go on with Telly Savalas narrating without Evel Knievel, and it was just excruciating.
What'd they do? Have the sharks do a tap dance?
Yes, really?
And apparently these sharks ended up being like the size, you know, of minnows anyway, so it wasn't very...
Baby
so
sharks.
It is kind of tragic, and you end up just feeling, you know, why? You know, why didn't he just say, I should have just been a good father and given up when I was on top, you know, that kind of thing. But it is a fascinating book, Evil, by Lee Montville.
So do you still have the toy?
No, I wish I did. I'm
it's
sure
probably,
it's worth a lot of money.
I have my John Glenn lunchbox, though.
Oh, excellent.
Because I'm older than you are, from like 1962. I have that. So, and I won't put it on eBay because someday I'm going to ask him to sign it for me. But anyway, we've got a few minutes left before we have to go to news and Terry Gross. So let's talk a little bit more about books. Dan is on the phone from Grandview, Driftless by David Rhodes. Hi, Dan.
Yes, it was a great book. I read it last summer. It's a book about a contemporary, it's a novel about the 21st century rural community. It's one of those books where they have a bunch of characters that their lives sort of intertwine and at different points along the book, but they each have their different stories. One of them is about a whistleblower getting involved in a modern agricultural scandal and things like that, and it's just, it was just great. Actually, I wound up listening to it as a book on tape, but it was a really nice portrait of a modern rural society in Wisconsin. Yeah,
I'm glad you've brought that up because that book is on my reading table. He, the author, spent a long time. He had an accident, I think it was, and was not able to write for like 10 years. So this is his, or 20 years. I don't know how long. And this is his first book after that, and it seems it came out, I think, last year.
And yeah, I think it was 2008.
Oh, yep. It's 2008. Okay. It's just, and it sounds like it's a very, very interesting book.
Yeah, it was. It's a very somber tone and just, but just great. It was really emotional, highs and lows, but yeah, just a nice, long, great novel to get into during the summer.
Mm. Great recommendation. Dan, thank you for your call. We have an email from Sarah. She has a beach book recommendation, or she's planning to read this book, Bossy Pants, by Tina Fey, and she wants to know if that's a good choice. I don't know why it would be a bad choice. Yeah. She's a clever, funny. I mean, I would love her forever for Sarah Palin. I think a lot of us will. I mean, so, and again, that's, I think it's 3 on the bestseller list right now, Bossy Pants, so I would think that'd be great. 3 minutes left. Last recommendations. Let's go back to Kevin.
I'll give a last recommendation. It's certainly not a beach read, but it's an English professor's read, I guess. A very short book that just came out, How to Write a Sentence by Stanley Fish. Stanley Fish, the great reader response critic from Duke University, now writes for the New York Times.
Oh, right. Okay.
And this is an excellent book if you're a big fan of grammar books. There are a few of them out there, like me. You like Strunk and White, that kind of thing.
Oh.
This is a good antidote to Strunk and White in that he's talking about how to write elegant literary sentences, not just about how to be clear and concise in your prose, which, of course, is a battle as well. But it's very well done, just over 100 pages, gives some great examples, not too overwhelming, couple little exercises to help you get going with your sentences, and all in a very engaging essay form. It's not an instructional book whatsoever. How to Write a Sentence.
Do you or will you assign that book at Capital?
Maybe I'll talk about it. It's not a kind of a book you would assign. It's to read and how to appreciate just the sentence as an art form in itself. And so he's a very good writer.
Cassie Rose.
I would like to recommend You Are My Heart and Other Stories by Jay... another author whose name I can't pronounce. I think it's Neugeboren. He's been
Neugeboren.
Well, he's been writing for 17 years, and this collection of short stories is, I just thoroughly enjoyed it because of the variety and also because this author clearly knows the human heart. And so there's some stories that, two that bookend the story are about coming-of-age stories of young boys in Brooklyn and basketball. You know, they love to play basketball and things like that. They also, in the middle of the book, there are some romantic themes between Jewish men and Irish women. But this is not a book that is of short stories that's like, let's say, Alice Munro. So I would not recommend, if you like short stories that are mini novels, this is not that kind of book. But for me, it's a kind of book I would take to a desert island because some of them make me think. Some of them are like short, almost fable-like. Others have this richness of character and time, like in Brooklyn in the 1950s. And I just loved the variety and the smartness of some of the stories. They take place in southern France. They take place in Africa. And just really a unique collection that I enjoyed very much. It's You Are My Heart and Other Stories by Jay...
Neugeboren.
Neugeboren.
I think the title is easy to remember. You Are My Heart.
You Are My
Heart.
Yes.
Do a title search. We have to say goodbye. I'm delighted that everybody called and emailed. Thank you very much for the recommendations we've had from beach books to learning how to write a sentence. And we all got to learn something and have some laughs today. And that's why we're here. Kevin Griffith from Capital University, thank you very much. Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, thelongestchapter.com. I'm Christopher Purdy from our sister, I guess, station, Classical 101, Classical Music. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.